And welcome back to Harry Potter and the Reread Podcast. I'm your host, David Jansen, joined as always with my co-host, Kyle Jans. Kyle, how are you?
This is a momentous
occasion.
When did we start this book? A year ago? It must be less than a year. It was only 30-some chapters. It's certainly
less than a year.
It feels like a year. It feels like more. But we've made it. We're at the final chapter of the Order of Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time, like, this book is significantly longer than the other ones. We talked about that a little bit before. This is when the length actually increased. I have here our first chapter of this book was May 12th, 2003. It was when it was published.
Okay.
So we're looking at 9-10 months to get through this book, reading one chapter a week. I mean, spoiler alert, this is chapter 38. So 38 weeks of podcasts with a couple of missed weeks in there. So roughly 40 weeks. We're looking at 9 months.
Makes about sense.
9-10 months. Yeah. So it's been a while.
But we're here.
We are here. So we're going to, you know, go through this last chapter. There's not really much to talk about in it, but we'll do the proverbial categories anyways, just for keep all fellow OCD people, making sure we hit all the topics we normally do. We'll talk a bit about the book and we'll wrap it up. I mean, here we are, Order of the Phoenix.
I think it's going to be an interesting discussion. I mean, at the beginning of this book, we had discussed this being probably the worst book of the series, and now we get a chance to see if that holds up as we finish this book now.
Yeah.
Find out.
Yeah. We'll find out. All right. So let me take you through the last chapter here. Chapter 38, the Second War Begins. And spoiler alert, their Second War does not begin. There's no war in this chapter at all. The Second War is Inevitable would be a better title for this chapter. But the chapter kicks off. The kids are in the infirmary. They've all made it back alive from the ministry, and they're reading a newspaper clipping where Fudge is explaining that Voldemort has returned, and in fact, the Dementors have all revolted and are no longer in charge of Azkaban. The article also lets us know that Dumbledore is reinstated as Hogwarts headmaster, as well as having all his previously stripped titles reinstated as well. And is also very complimentary of Harry, referring to him again as the boy who lived and not as an insane person like they had been doing previously to him in the Daily Prophet. This is a Daily Prophet article, obviously. So, like I said, everyone's in the infirmary recovering. No one has any long-term injuries that they have to worry about. Umbridge is also in the infirmary. She was rescued from the centaurs by Dumbledore. She's a little bit on edge, we'll say. We don't know what happened to her, but she reacts to the sounds of hooves clopping. So Harry leaves the infirmary. He's going to go see Hagrid. He decided to not tell any of his friends about the details of the prophecy. So they're all operating under the impression that the prophecy is destroyed and we didn't learn what it was, because Neville was there when the prophecy was destroyed. So he conveyed that information and Harry didn't correct him. On his way to Hagrid's, Harry runs into Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle. Malfoy is very mad because Harry has gotten his dad arrested and branded as a Death Eater. They're about to fight when Snape and McGonagall arrive. Snape was going to do Snape things, but McGonagall is back and healthy. She's good to go now. And she awards a bunch of people house points because, of course, we do. I think finally, though, Gryffindor is not going to win because they had 0 points before she awarded the points there. So his visit with Hagrid is uneventful. He doesn't want to talk about Sirius. Hagrid keeps bringing it up. So he decides to leave, tells Hagrid he has to go back to the infirmary after using the excuse to visit Hagrid to leave the infirmary. So the term ends. There's not much going on. exams are done. Harry has to go back to Privet Drive. He's you know, he knows he has to do it, but he still doesn't want to. While he's packing up all his stuff, he finds the gift from Sirius that he had forgotten about. It's a two-way conversation mirror that if you tap on the mirror and say Sirius's name, they would have been able to communicate. It obviously doesn't work now that Sirius is dead. So he then has a little bit of a eureka moment, and he goes and finds Nick and asks if Sirius would come back as a ghost, but Nick is unfortunate, or Nick lets Harry down nicely and says Sirius is not the kind of person who'd come back as a ghost, hinting that to come back as a ghost, you had to be afraid of dying, and that's not really who Sirius was. So Harry decides he's going to avoid the last feast and is just sort of wandering aimlessly. He runs into Luna, and turns out people have stolen all her stuff throughout the year, and she's just out looking for it. She needs it back before the term ends. They have a bit of a conversation. They talk about Sirius, and they talk about Luna's mother, who died when Luna was 9, so she sort of knows a little bit about what Harry's going for. They board the train, head back to London. Malfoy and crew try to attack Harry, but the train compartment that they're all in turns out full of DA members. So it goes poorly for Malfoy. He's not having a good couple weeks here. Then we get some final good teen drama for the book. Turns out Cho is dating Michael Corner. Harry realizes that he doesn't mind, and he actually makes a nice comment that hopefully she's more cheerful now that she's found a better boyfriend than him. That's not how he words it, but that's how I'm going to word it.
Essentially what he means.
Yeah. Ginny has dumped Michael Corner because he couldn't handle that Ravenclaw lost to Gryffindor in Quidditch. Ron says, I hope next time you pick somebody better. And she says, well, is Dean Thomas better? Because that's who I've picked. Doesn't go great for Ron. Can't really handle it. We get to the train station, King's Cross. Turns out the whole order is there waiting for Harry, and Moody specifically goes over and he sort of threatens the head Dursleys on Harry's behalf, and we get some final goodbyes and some promise that they'll see Harry soon.
And the
And
Great War continues.
the second war, there's no war at all. It's not happening yet. We're in the pre-war deliberations for sure. That's the book.
The
That's the
book.
chapter, that's the book.
We did it.
Let's talk about this chapter really quick. There's really not much to talk about. So let's go through our predictions. Your predictions that we were going to wrap things up.
Who would have guessed that?
We clearly wrapped them up. You said we were going to have a debrief with the friends about the conversation with Dumbledore. That didn't really
Didn't really
happen.
happen, no.
And you said we would get some public news of Voldemort's return. That did happen. So not the greatest predictions and outcomes for you there, but I didn't do much better. I said the Ministry will confirm that Voldemort is back. Yes. Then I said Harry's going to get Grimmauld Place. That didn't happen.
That didn't,
Then
no.
I said he was going to tell his friends about the prophecy. That didn't happen. Then I said Fudge was going to get fired. That didn't happen. Then I said he would find the mirror that Sirius gave him, and that of course did happen.
Yours were at least a lot more specific than mine,
Yeah,
so I
I
can give
feel
you some
like.
credit for that.
Now I would use those three things about Grimmauld Place and Fudge being fired. That'd be my predictions for the start of the next book, which we're not going to do because who knows, we're going to read it and we're going to forget. So anything from this last chapter that you had forgotten?
I mean, I guess kind of the feedback or whatever from Draco being kind of mad about everything that came out. I never really considered that being an option or something that would
Yeah.
be covered at this point.
Same with me. I had forgotten that Malfoy Sr. actually would have been arrested. I know that the Death Eaters were defeated, but I didn't really put two and two together that they were, yeah,
They were
captured in
also
the
be
Ministry.
revealed. Yeah.
Yeah, so that I had forgotten, and then the subplot of Malfoy Jr. there trying to attack Harry.
I forgot that Cho had moved on and that it set up Dean Thomas and Ginny and this
Surprisingly,
Michael Corner guy gets around. He went like
he.
straight from Ginny right to Cho.
Yeah. I mean, I actually did know that was I did know that was happening for some reason. I don't know why I remembered that, but yeah, there we are. Again, nothing really
The
happened.
things we retained. in this book that are important versus not.
Nothing really happened, so there wasn't too much to make sense. I guess the only thing I really have here is I still don't really understand why Harry has to spend more than like a week at Privet Drive. We already know he doesn't really think of it as home.
Yeah.
So there's a loophole there. So why he has to go back for more than like a week, I don't know, but
it's
he
his
does.
Legal address. He should. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything stand out to you there?
No, that's about it. I mean, that's exactly what we kind of figured would be happening at this point. There would be some kind of train ride home. The Dursleys thing, the warning, I guess that would be something maybe that I thought was interesting and just kind of it makes it kind of go full circle once again, obviously, going from the Dursleys to going back home and having a little bit more wizard to Dursley interaction, which we haven't really seen in books prior.
No,
But
not really.
otherwise, no, just summing things up, and we get through what is the longest book of the Harry
So far.
Potter series.
Yeah, and there's a couple like moments in that chapter that I'll call out that were kind of cool. There was a comment there that the swamp that had been there since Fred and George left, as soon as Dumbledore was back, Flitwick got rid of it within minutes.
Of
but
course.
he roped off a small section and left it there so that everybody could, like marvel at. That was actually some pretty cool magic that the Weasley twins put out there.
It's actually pretty neat.
Yeah. The interaction between Harry and Luna was kind of nice to see Harry, to see Luna have some, like she makes a comment about, they call me Loony Lovegood. Like she's not as oblivious as she puts on, but she's just so content with who she is that she just doesn't care. Harry offers to help her track down her stuff and she's not worried about it. She says, oh, it'll come back. So that was kind of a nice interaction.
He kind of like, yeah, just on that point, like at the beginning of the book, him and everyone else, they kind of see her as like the outcast, don't really want much involved with her. But as we learn more about her throughout the book, we learn more about her character and who she actually is. And I think it's safe to say that she has earned the respect of Harry as well, just given all the events that happened leading up. But
she certainly earned more respect, probably not enough to be considered polite, but here we are. Here we are. Yeah, and then Harry finds that mirror, and it's funny to me that what he thinks is, oh, maybe I can use this to talk to Sirius now, and not realizing that he could have used it to talk to Sirius before. So
that's something that it's totally, yeah, when it is given at the beginning, you don't really think much of it.
We don't know what it is.
You don't really think about it until afterwards.
We don't know what it is
brought up,
because Sirius doesn't explain what it does very well.
The flu network really sets the precedent that like that was the only way for them to be able to communicate, which wasn't
true. I'm sure that's going to come up again later in our conversations. Any quotes you liked from this chapter?
Nah.
That's fair. The ones I have were not that impressive. I liked one where Luna is being Luna and Hermione is struggling not to react to Luna being Luna. And there's a quote, Ginny caught Harry's eye and looked away quickly, grinning. Just to kind of show, again, more, we've been pointing these out, like, they interacted. Like, they interacted.
This is your beef here.
They have some, actually... I just really hate how the movies do such a poor job with her. And it's like, this is stuff, it's like, you know, when you're in the, like, with your group of friends and something happens, you know, there's like, you make eye contact with a certain person and you're like, you always make contact with that person in those situations. And I feel like when it's the six of them here in the bigger DA, it's not Ron, Harry, and Hermione. Like, he has a relationship with Ginny that grows and we don't see it, but we definitely saw that in this book.
And they're capable. Yeah. And in a situation like that, they're capable of essentially saying something to each other without saying something.
Yeah. And then there was one at the end. It's a conversation back and forth where I picked little pieces out of it, but it goes, are you threatening me, sir? That's Vernon Dursley. Yes, I am. Moody. And do I look like the kind of man who can be intimidated? Yes, I'd have to say you do. So, that's it. All right. Now some very strange MVP, LVP.
It's hard. I guess I'd go Draco MVP or LVP rather, just because he's trying to be intimidating and
doesn't go his way. Yeah,
it doesn't go his way. MVP. Tough. Was it just Moody who kind of led the way with Vernon, or was it kind of a group effort? Like, I could
I
give it
mean,
to.
it was sort of a group effort. You could go with Moody, though. That's fine.
Just for a banger of a line.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with Hagrid for LVP, actually, because Harry clearly doesn't want to talk about Sirius, and Hagrid does not put that together. MVP, I'm gonna go with Luna. She's just, I just like that she's just herself. She goes with the flow. She's not too worried. She, unlike Hagrid, understands what Harry is trying to feel, is empathetic, has a nice conversation, and then kind of gets the she kind of reads the room that she needs to get out of that conversation before
That's fair. Yeah.
it goes poorly. Harry himself was not good or bad this chapter, so we'll go there. And that's the book.
That's the book. Da-da. So
So
let's talk about it overall. Because
overall,
we went into this book being, oh, this is going to be
well,
tough. This is not going to be great. But
I think we went into this book having heard from people who'd read this book recently that this book was not good. And I didn't remember it being like before I got that feedback, I didn't remember it being like not that good. And so then we read it. And let me tell you, this was definitely a book in the Harry Potter franchise. It's about the nicest I can say on it. I mean, we certainly ragged a lot on it as we were reading it. And I think the way we chose to break this book down didn't benefit this book. Like,
No.
we read one chapter at a time for basically a year. And I think that's a poor way to read this book.
It's a terrible way
I
to
think if you
read it.
binge read this book in the middle of binge reading the series back to back to back, you just sort of get through it and it's not so bad. In hindsight, a better way to have done this book would have been to read like five chapters at a time, talk about them, move on to the next five chapters. Because the pacing of this book is so bad. Like, interesting things happened in this book, but like most of them happened in the last like 100 pages. And before that, when anything interesting started to happen, it just slowed down to like an absolute drag.
There's way too much classroom owl student stuff going on. That's what really hurt the pace of this book. But when I think about the details of this plot and how it feeds into the overall series story arc, there are so many crucial parts that happen or originate in this book. Like, you have the prophecy, you have the creation of Dumbledore's army, you meet some of the new Order of the Phoenix members like Tonks and Kingsley Shacklebolt and that type of thing. There are some really crucial parts to the overall series here that happen. You get a Dumbledore Voldemort battle, which is amazing. And I think that might be it. Does it happen next book as well? I don't even know. I don't think
I
it.
mean, so that's actually my overall summary of this book as well, is like it's certainly not a highlight of the reread to this point. But there are important things that happen in this book. And if you were to skip it, like it wouldn't really. I mean, if you were to skip it on a reread, there's a lot of things that happen, like details-wise, that we had forgotten that we kept talking about as we go through. Like there was the whole Department of Mysteries and how they set it up. Like, basically, we basically watched Harry. So previous to this book, I would say Harry didn't make too many mistakes that really backfired. He makes a lot of mistakes in this book, and I think that's important. We also see Dumbledore make mistakes. I think that's important. And so while I would have loved if we could have sped through some things, dragged some other things out, overall, we need to have like this book, the plot movement in this book is important. And there's a lot of setup that like we have a whole creature and Mundungus Fletcher storyline that we still have to resolve that matters in the next book, in the
I
next
think
book,
so. Yep.
in the next book. And We had to set it up. Now, did we have to talk about how shady a guy Mundungus was 15 times in this book? No. We could have done it like 4 times and not been bashed over the head with it and then not get any resolution to it, which I think is what's the most frustrating to some of those like subplots. Because she's not the author who sets up a bunch of subplots in books 1, 2, 3 that we're still waiting to resolve. She's like a self-contained, and this is the first time she's not self-contained in the books. And I know it's just, it was a book. We read it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think still, I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but like the Lost Prophecy chapter, probably my favorite chapter of the entire series so far. And the most important one too, really describing the backstory of the origin of the prophecy, why, and just
the connection between Voldemort and Harry. Well, it answers the biggest question. It answers the big question of why did Voldemort feel like he needed to attack Harry in the first place?
Exactly, right? We don't really have those answers until then.
We just sort of think he wanted to.
We get a lot of great emotion from like Harry and Dumbledore out of that chapter. You had talked about how both make mistakes throughout. They both, well, Dumbledore most or acknowledges the mistakes that he made in this chapter.
Well, we also, the previous chapter, Harry acknowledged that his mistakes led everybody to being there. Like he did finally get to the fact that's in it. It's just, it's unfortunate how long it took us to get there. And it's totally unfortunate agree. That we had to, like, how many times in this book was Harry sad? Harry flies off the handle. Harry realizes he's being ridiculous. He gets normal again. Then he gets sad. Like I felt like we did that like 4 times too. Maybe not 4, but like we went through that cycle a bunch.
Yeah.
And we just didn't need to. So overall, I think this book is worse than I remembered it to be. That being said, like you said, that the last couple chapters were excellent, and they certainly kick us off to when we get started on the next book. We're going to start off on a high point.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? It sets everything up. It needed a long setup, but we had to get there from, because it's truly transitional from how the book and the series starts, where it's just kind of Harry dealing with individual problems each year. But as they continue, everything you learn is connected and grows, and it really, you get the culture shift here this time around. And then this is where we truly start to see the plot and the entire series really kick into high gear in order for us to kind of resolve what comes next. So we're at that point of the book, and it takes a lot of setup to get there.
It did. I think the payoff actually,
is worth it though. Like
the payoff is worth it. And I actually think we didn't talk about this, but Sirius dying
that
matters.
Yeah.
Like, it matters. Like up to this point, yeah, we lost Cedric. Like that was like a big, oh, this is starting to get dark. But we weren't really emotionally connected to Cedric Diggory.
There's no Ned Stark moment at this, well, until this point.
I mean, there's no moment to say someone that we've like invested in it. We haven't lost anyone we've invested in.
Exactly.
And not only did we lose someone we invested in, we spent a whole book subtly hinting that it's all Harry's fault.
Yeah.
Now, it's not all Harry's fault, because
Sirius made choices.
And we're going to talk about that. But here we are. I mean, we also should say, we should go through some of the more, like, let's have a little bit more of a structured conversation here. And let's talk about some of our favorite parts of this book. And then we can, you know, summarize our least favorite parts if we haven't, you know, already bashed you over the head with those, and talk about pacing. And we can move from there. So favorite parts. My favorite part of this book. Honestly, it's the front cover.
The front cover.
The front cover of this book is awesome. I don't know why Fox is on the front cover. He's barely in this book. This is the only one that Harry's not on, to my recollection.
I believe so.
But the color, the spine colors look very nice on your bookshelf. And yeah, we get a good character on the front. No, I mean, that's a little bit of a joke. It's not a joke in the sense I do really like the front cover. It's not the best part of this book. You talked about it. The best part of this book is the two chapter arc of I guess it's actually a three chapter arc of they go to the Department of Ministries. That's not the good part. But the Death Eaters appear. We have the battle for the prophecy. We have Voldemort appear, fight Dumbledore, and then we have Dumbledore explain the prophecy. Like that three chapter arc at the end of the book, that is the best part of this book, and I don't really think there's any question to that.
There's no debate. It's a transformation in how Dumbledore and Harry interact with each other because it's stated there. Up until that point, Dumbledore had been treating Harry like a child and wanting to protect him from some very crucial information about his life and his backstory, all the way to the point where it was almost too late. Like it couldn't be avoided now. It led to a tragic death of Sirius. It led to something that could have been avoided had they discussed it earlier. But now is the point where Dumbledore treats Harry as an adult, as an equal, as someone who is going to be contributing now to the demise of Voldemort, essentially, or treating him as this equal. The entire time, Harry had been so frustrated that he wasn't involved in these conversations, even though everything was about him and centered around him. And so that's the very moment you can pinpoint it to exactly that moment is when things really change in how Dumbledore treats and talks to Harry.
I agree. I mean, the other part of this book that I liked when the Weasleys left the school and they had the whole swamp. The swamp was cool.
That was cool.
That was cool. All right. So my least favorite part, obviously, is the pacing of this book. Now, we've talked about that a bunch already, so I don't want to talk about that. From a plot perspective, I don't understand why we needed to deal with Grop at all. And this is one of the things that impacted the pacing is because for how long did we say something's up with Hagrid? First it was, where is Hagrid? Then Hagrid reappears, and then it's something's up with Hagrid. And then eventually we finally learn about Grop. And like, we don't really get that much payoff.
He's used
Like,
as like a plot device to help them escape from,
Umbridge.
well, from the
But the
centaurs.
only reason they have to escape from the centaurs is because they're trying to get rid of Umbridge. And there just could have been other ways to do that. Like, I don't know.
There must, I don't know. He must come back at some
I
point.
don't
We'll have to
remember him
keep an eye
coming
on
back.
it, but
I don't remember him coming back at all. And maybe if he does, maybe I'll revisit this. But right now, it's just that whole storyline to me. It just didn't hit.
it wasn't necessary. Yeah.
What about you?
I have to go back to the pacing, like, and just the sheer amount of classes. Like, owls, they're an exam, they're a standardized test
Owls.
that everyone has to take, but
Owls.
we didn't need chapters and chapters of
Owls.
book, classes happening over and over again. These owls are important to you. They're crucial to your ability to be able to move on. Yes, the overall exam sequence or whatever was important for Harry to be able to pass out, fall
Was it?
asleep, and then, well, I mean, he needed to be able to have
Honestly,
it at some point. It could have been in private, though. It didn't have to be in public in the middle of an exam,
he could have just had that dream at night. The
but if you would have
owls
had it
don't.
at if you would have had it at night, then maybe because he thought it was happening immediately, and part of the reason why he was like
Okay, but he could have just fallen
concerned
asleep
about it.
outside having a
Yeah,
nap.
exactly. Yeah.
And
No, I totally agree.
the owls don't even matter because like they do matter in the sense of
But they don't matter to us.
they'll play like a little bit of like, oh
Oh, Harry, can you become an auror? Or,
yeah.
yeah.
And like, spoiler alert, we don't even see Harry graduate because he doesn't go back for his seventh year of school. We spend all this time. Here's
The
where we are.
yeah, it was
Like,
the amount of emphasis on these stupid exams that really did not make me enjoy
and
portions of this book.
at the end of the day, it's not gonna, like, we don't get in the next book, we don't get payoff that Harry failed one of these exams to the point where he can't take a course he wants to. We get that threatened and it goes away immediately. So yeah, owls, that's a good one because
Owls.
it's not the only thing that draws out the pacing, but it certainly impacts it. We spend so much time before we even get to Hogwarts in this one too, and it's like, why? To what effect? I guess we get a little bit. I guess actually, you know what? That's probably unfair
He
because
needed to be attacked. You
we
need
needed
to
to.
learn about the start of the order.
We do, and we need to get some of that serious moment to. Okay, so I guess we did need to spend some time
But
before we
maybe
got to
not as
Hogwarts,
much.
but
Yeah.
we could have spent time dealing with Sirius as opposed to having that be like the result of what was happening. Like we spent so much time cleaning. We didn't need to clean. We could have just had conversations, right? Like, yeah. All right. So what would you say was the biggest thing that you had forgotten about this book?
I think we both forgot it, but we were both convinced that Quidditch would be canceled for everyone
That's
and
true.
that Ron would not be a keeper this year.
Yeah, that's true.
That was the biggest thing to me. It's a small thing in the grand scheme of things, but I mean, that was kind of the biggest thing for me that kind of stood out. I could say I forgot maybe a little bit about like the whole creature subplot as well. Because it's not really important until the next book. It's one of those things that
Yeah.
is getting set up for us, but we don't
I mean,
get
we did
that
get the
payoff
payoff
as
that
well.
like creature betrayed Sirius.
Yeah, no,
But
that's true.
yeah, I had forgotten just how moody Harry was.
Really? I never forgot that. I just remember
Like
like so many
to
caps locks.
I mean I do, but I just like a few times it seemed like we'd finally moved past it and we just hadn't. I had just forgotten like how bad it was.
I
And
think
like
as
that's what I
I'm
said.
older now, though, I think about like the emotional like
Yeah, that's
complexities
fair.
that he was going through, and I'm like, yeah, I could see why he was pissed
Oh,
off all the
I
time.
certainly could
Yeah.
empathize as to why he was feeling the way he did. And I guess, again, normally, like if I'm going to read Harry Potter, I'm going to read all seven books in a span of 2 months, not in a span of one book. And so you just sort of get through it, and it's not that big a deal. I had forgotten how big a deal Neville played at the end, and that was kind of fun to see. Like
Yeah.
we'd been talking a lot about how Ginny was criminally underrated, book to movie. This is another book where we actually see a lot from Neville that just doesn't make it into the movie.
I mean, even getting, I forgot, that's another thing. I forgot we meet like his parents
Yeah.
accidentally in the hospital this time around. And so it sets that up. I recall, like, or I always knew, and I don't know if the movies discuss it to the same extent, that Neville was like the other possibility that it could have been in regards to who the prophecy was regarding. So I knew that it kind of touched on that stuff, but maybe not to the extent that it did. Certainly when they go to the hospital and everything there, meeting them, that was something that I'd totally forgotten about and is actually pretty important when you think about Neville's development as a character as well.
All right, let's get into it. I've been looking forward to talking about this. What is the biggest thing that did not make sense to you about this book?
To me, I guess it would probably have to be Ooh, that's a good question. Why don't you go first?
Okay, so there's the obvious one where why the hell does Dumbledore explain literally nothing to Harry at any point? Like that is the biggest thing that doesn't make sense is you don't have to tell him everything, tell him something and we get a totally different book. That's like the big obvious one where if he had just sort of explained why he was avoiding him, if he had explained why he had to learn Occlumency from Snape, if he had explained literally anything, the book would have ended very differently. That's the obvious one. The one that drives me absolutely up the wall. Why did Sirius not tell Harry exactly what the mirror did when he gave it to him? He gave it to him as he was leaving. He was there for Christmas. The whole Christmas. They were there. They were visiting in and out. He was there. And he gave it to him with a note basically that says, if you need me, you can use this. Why if you need me? Why can't we use it if we just want to chat? Then, okay, so he didn't explain it right away. Okay, that's dumb. Then Harry doesn't contact him using it ever. That's not weird to you, Sirius Black? You don't want to find a way to send a message to Harry
Even when they're like back in the fireplace. Hey,
Well,
remember,
no, we're
he's
getting to that. We're getting to that. We're getting to that.
there.
But like even before that, you gave him basically a telephone in a place where people don't use telephones, and you're not surprised he never uses it. Okay, that's weird. Then you realize he broke into a ministry person's fireplace to contact him. They have a conversation for a decent amount of time. Part of that conversation is how dumb an idea this was. And again, in that conversation, he never says anything about the mirror. Then they get taken away, and he's like, oh, interesting. I guess I should maybe find out if he just forgot about that mirror I
Forgot
gave
about
him,
it.
where we could have just had this conversation. No, he never brings it up. And this is why it's tough for you can't blame Sirius dying on Harry because Sirius makes his own decisions. They told him not to come. He comes anyways. But he just like this is he had the means to get to him. He's also, they talk about it. The reason he chooses to come is he's like going stir crazy. So again, why not satisfy some of that and just explain to him at any point in time from when he gives him the mirror to just after they have that first fire conversation, find a way to get the message to him that it's there. You don't think that McGonagall wouldn't have passed that message along and been like, hey, I'm worried about what Harry's been up to. He's taking some risks to contact me. Tell him about to look at the gift I gave him. It won't be so risk. Like, it's just not there.
That's the
Lupin
thing.
can just go to the school. We in fact learn that Lupin is going to go to the school to talk to Snape about the occlumency, and he
Could have
doesn't
passed it along.
like it's just that's just so frustrating to me.
Yeah, the thing is, it's like they make it out to be like, oh, all communication in and out of the castle is being monitored. Therefore, it's impossible. It's never going to happen. So it's like they don't explore any type of alternative, which just sets up for so much miscommunication. The only thing, I guess, now that I've had a chance to think about it, what didn't make sense to me is that Harry can't see these thresholds until the
Yeah,
fifth year.
there's
That's all,
also
and
that.
like that's a small thing, but it's like he should have been seeing
You know
these
what?
things from day one.
I was literally about to say there are lots of small things that didn't make sense, including the Thestrals, but I like you called it out because that was dumb. And then it was dumb that the Thestrals just are just GPS and you can just talk to them and you don't have to speak Thestral, but that's fine. That's fine.
Just seems like they, or at least they would have been aware of them before for like a Care of Magical Creatures class or something. Like today we're learning about horses. And these are all the horses, and then this is an invisible horse that you can't see.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. All right. It's that time where we pick out our favorite quote or quotes from the book.
It's funny because it's a book full of like tons of emotional moments between Harry and Dumbledore and them discussing a lot. But for some reason, I just cannot look past Hermione talking to these two about Cho Chang being like, just because you have the emotional range of a teaspoon doesn't mean
That's
we
good.
all have.
That's good.
It's
That
such a
is
good insult.
good. I agreed. I was also trying to think like what quote stands out to me from this book? And I was thinking about it. And it's just that one, it's in chapter 29. It's actually a set of quotes. And this is another one of the most useless chapters of all time, chapter 29, career advice. And it's just McGonagall just burying Umbridge over and
Yes.
over and over again. He has achieved high marks in all defense against the dark arts tests set by a competent teacher. I will assist you to become an Auror if it is the last thing I do. If I have to coach you nightly, I will make sure you achieve the required results after Umbridge says Harry won't be able to make it. And then when she just says to her finally, "You are raving." Like, just every time McGonagall, I mean, on this reread, and I think we're going to see it even more in the next two, like, McGonagall's just awesome.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I'm gonna build on that because earlier on as well, when Harry gets in trouble for the first time, remember this is the book where he was doing detentions at the beginning and writing, "I must not tell
We
lies."
didn't talk about the torture
The
at all in this
torture
book.
that is terrible and should have never have been tolerated.
Yeah.
But at one point, McGonagall and Harry have a discussion where McGonagall's like, "Hey, you gotta cool it with her because she's with the ministry." And it's a quote, or it's a series of quotes again. "Is it true that you showed it at Professor Umbridge?" "Yes." "You called her a liar?" "Yes." "You told her he who must not be named is back?" "Yes." "Have a biscuit, Potter."
Yeah, no, she was awesome. She was awesome. Anything else you want to say about this book?
I think we've covered it. Good parts, bad parts, super crucial to the overall plot and series, but not executed at 100%. That's, I think, the best way
No,
to describe it for me.
I would agree. All right. We're not going to forget to do it this time. We're going to go
Yes.
through the MVP and LVP of this book. All right. So let's start with LVP. I got the points here somewhere.
It's got to be Umbridge. That's my guess.
Wait.
Wait.
Yeah, so there's a clear runaway LVP, but there's a group here. Okay. So in third place at minus 25 points here, we have Cornelius Fudge. I think that's fair.
That stands out. Whenever I think there was one chapter this entire book, and maybe this entire series, where he wasn't the least valuable.
Yeah, so that's fair. Next least valuable, Harry Potter.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I mean, we see him do some good, but we also see him with so much tunnel vision when it comes to issues of Sirius and determining what's in the Department of Mysteries that it really sets his team back quite a bit. And he puts them in a lot of danger the entire way through the book, too, especially later on.
Yeah, so I will say that we chose combined Harry as LVP seven times. I think that math, if that math is right. Oh no, not seven times, 14 times. Sorry.
And then seven
But
positives, probably.
we also did come and pick him positive six times. So he's not so bad. So he's at minus 40 points.
Okay.
At minus 75 points, meaning we 15 times. 15 times Dolores Umbridge was the LVP.
Which, I mean, that goes without saying.
It
Child
go.
torture,
Yeah.
drugging.
Yeah,
Just
it's all
more can we
bad.
say?
For you in particular, it's the same Umbridge, Potter, Fudge, 1, 2, 3. For me, it's Umbridge, Harry, and then I have a bunch of people tied for that third spot of my least valuable. Who are they here? We've got Fudge, Hagrid, Sirius Black, and also Percy Weasley.
Hagrid's up there, Percy, just for being Percy.
Yeah. On the MVP side, this is a bit more of an interesting one. We, in fact, do not have a singular winner here. We have one, two, three, four, five characters tied for first in terms of most valuable,
Interesting.
with the differentiator being how many times they were awarded MVP as the tiebreaker. Now, or maybe that's. I figure out how we want to award this.
Think that makes sense.
So
If they have fewer
see if you can name
LVPs,
the let's see if you can name the five characters who were MVP of this book.
Dumbledore was badass.
Nope.
Hermione, really?
Not Dumbledore.
I guess he wasn't around enough. He was in there a lot at the end.
Dumbledore had the second most amount of MVP points, but he was LVP three times.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Fred and George. We
Okay,
loved
so
us some Fred and
Hermione,
George. Hermione.
the Weasleys. Yep, those are the two. Those are two that you got.
Did you see this?
I did see that. Three
I had
more.
a little bubble come up.
Yeah.
All right, after that, I think Luna must be in the mix.
Nope.
No.
I'll give you two more guesses here to see if you can get any of them.
I don't think Ron is in there. Ron was not useful enough. McGonagall probably because she
McGonagall.
was very good
Yep.
against Umbridge.
Yep.
And then we're gonna have to go with probably. Oh, interesting. I was gonna say Sirius would be like either really good or really bad, but he must not have been involved enough.
He was bad. Yeah. All right. I'll
Lupin
just tell
Lee.
you.
Yeah, tell
The other
me.
two people are Neville
Yeah.
and Lupin, actually.
Oh, Lupin. Okay. So
Yeah.
whenever he showed up, he must have been having a good impact.
So
He was a good
the
moderator at times.
yes. So he had the impact of at the beginning. He was in there doing the right stuff. So we have the Weasley twins, Neville, Lupin, and McGonagall were all awarded MVP 5 times.
Okay.
Hermione was awarded MVP 11 times.
Wow.
However, she was also awarded LVP 6 times.
Okay.
So it all works out the same, but I think where we got to go as the tiebreaker, the MVP of this book is Hermione.
I think so, based off the sheer amount. I mean, granted, she's in most of the chapters as well, so that certainly bodes
It
in her
helps.
favor. But
Oh,
congratulations.
well, this is interesting because your MVP, you have two that are tied.
Okay.
And they were the first two that came out of your mouth, which were Dumbledore and Hermione.
I loved me some Dumbledore, this book. I really
Yeah.
did.
And then after that, you had the twins and Neville. For me, my MVP of this book is a three-way tie at the top. And it's Lupin, McGonagall, and not surprisingly, Ginny Weasley. Now, for me, for my scores in here, they were all just generally lower. So Ginny did get 15. I did get it's only you only needed to be positive three more times than you were negative to be my top MVP. So there's some interesting stats, but I think we walk away with this book being, yeah, her without Hermione, they're all screwed.
That's true. She came
Yeah.
through so many times for them in making sure that they would behave in class around Umbridge to her really kind of willing them or helping them through to get to the ministry in the end. So good
Sorry,
on Hermione.
I want to just call out a couple other things because there are some interesting things to talk about. Total MVP points, we talked about Hermione far and away 11 times, Dumbledore 7 times, Harry 6 times. It's just that Dumbledore and Harry also came back and were LVP a few times to cancel it out. So, underrated, Mrs. Fig, she got 3 positive votes.
Good for Mrs. Fig.
Yeah. And yeah, nothing else too interesting there. We have finished this book, and let me tell you, I'm excited to take it off my desk and have to stop having to look at it every day.
Mean, but it's such a beautiful cover,
It
beautiful
is.
spine.
It is. So we're going to take a break for a bit here. Probably come back probably that May time period. Probably
I
feels
think
like
so.
that's right where we'll be back. You might see a movie episode between now and then, but that might not come back till we get back. I think we'll probably do a movie episode. I'd like to do a short episode where we preview book 6, just like a 10, 15-minute conversation talking about what we think is going to happen, what we're looking forward to, that type of stuff. And then we'll get back into it one chapter
At
at
a
a time.
time.
I like the one chapter at a time.
I like it too. It's fun to talk about things in depth. I think also it gives us a better. I've really feel like I've bumped up my Harry Potter lore knowledge over the last little while as we kind of break things down individually. And so maybe come a time when there is a Harry Potter trivia night, we will
Well, let
actually
me
be
tell you,
good.
I got sent to Harry Potter trivia yesterday. That was for yesterday, and we just didn't have time to scramble to get it together. But it would have been fun. But yeah, I feel more equipped as well. So
Absolutely. And we're at more at ease now as we move through Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
yeah, we are. So we don't have to talk about this book again. Well, I guess we'll have to watch the movie and talk about it. But we don't have to talk about this book for a while. Thank you all for listening to us complain about this book for 40 episodes. We won't do that. I'm excited for the next one. I don't want to talk about it yet, but we are excited, or I am. You can get on board if you're not.
I am.
And I'm David. That was Kyle. Bye.